Support comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This exhibition features all four of the Spanish artists' major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. Now on view. More at NortonSimon.org.
You have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes, too, when you donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.
It's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Wonderful to have you with us. Fresh Air with Terry Gross coming up at the top of the hour. Jeffrey Gettleman, New York Times reporter, is in New Delhi and is going to be reporting on the ongoing tragedy of COVID-19 in India. That's coming up at, coming up at noon. Fresh Air right here on KPCC. Well, it's standard procedure these days to have someone's BMI or body mass index calculated. The idea is to see how much body fat are you carrying and what sorts of potential health risks will come from being overweight or clinically obese. But there's been criticism that BMI is not a very good proxy for those health conditions, and that if used exclusively or not factored into other conditions, can be misleading. Joining us to talk about BMI and its role in understanding individuals' health is Jamie Ard, clinical researcher and professor of epidemiology and prevention at Wake Forest School of Medicine. Dr. Ard co-directs Wake's Baptist Health Weight Management Center. Thank you very much, Dr. Ard, for being with us today. First of all, what do you think is the benefit of this particular index?
Well, thank you for having me. I think the main thing that body mass index is useful for is as an epidemiologic tool to really sort of give you a sense at a population level where people are in terms of the range of body size. That's basically what BMI does. It gives you a sense of what someone's body size might be. I think the other potential benefit of body mass index is that it can be an opener for a conversation about health and body weight, and that it's a screening tool. And that screening tool can allow you to begin to have conversations with people about their health concerns and the impact that body weight might be playing on those health concerns.
Is there any other measure that we have available that similarly provides insight into an individual's risk of obesity or overweight-related conditions or illnesses?
There are other measures, and they range from assessing percent body fat using any number of different tools, to doing something as simple as looking at a waist circumference or comparing waist circumference to, say, the circumference of your hips and using a ratio there. And those tools have been demonstrated to be effective in terms of having a relationship between metabolic health and those indices.
And is BMI a good proxy for metabolic health? Does it do what it's intended to do?
Well, it has some shortcomings when it comes to being very specific for risk for metabolic health. And I think this is where some of the criticism comes in that body mass index is a poor man's proxy for percent body fat or excess fat. And we know that in general populations, it works fairly well in terms of being correlated with percent body fat. But in certain populations, it doesn't work as well. And the other challenge is that in some ethnicities and different populations, the relationship between BMI and percent body fat changes. So say, for example, someone from Southeast Asia can have a lower BMI, but generally will have a higher percent body fat at that lower BMI compared to someone, say, from European ancestry or African ancestry. So it does have a different sort of relationship with body fat depending on the type of person that you are considering.
Do healthcare providers typically understand that sort of racial difference and BMI's strengths or limitations as that body fat proxy?
I would say in general, no. We just don't do a lot of education in our medical education programming around obesity, nutrition, these types of concerns. It's a limitation of our healthcare system, and I believe we certainly should be doing better than what we're doing. And I believe that a lot of these nuances around the usefulness of BMI and its limitations are often lost for a lot of providers, and that becomes a frustration for patients.
We're talking with Wake Forest School of Medicine clinical researcher and professor of epidemiology and prevention, Dr. Jamie Ard. He's also the co-director of the Wake Forest Baptist Health Weight Management Center. Joining us from right here in Southern California is UC Irvine Associate Professor of Sociology, Sabrina Strings. The professor has research interests including the sociology of medicine, and she's author of Fearing the Black Body, The Racial Origins of Fat Phobia. Professor Strings, welcome. Good to have you with us today.
Thank you for having me on.
What are your concerns about the use of BMI as a health proxy?
Well, BMI was actually never intended for utilization as a health proxy. It was invented by a Belgian statistician by the name of Adolphe Quetelet in the 19th century in order to measure the distribution of population weights. And he was very clear that this is not a tool that should be used to measure individual adiposity. Unfortunately, when its name was changed to BMI and it was beginning to be used in the medical field, first in the United States and then globally, that's precisely how it was used. It was used in a way in which it was not created to be utilized. And here are some of the problems with BMI. First of all, it cannot measure muscle mass or weight distribution, such that an individual who is a bodybuilder, for example, might have the same BMI as someone who very rarely exercises, and therefore their health profiles would seem to be similar based on this faulty tool, which we can all intuit is a problem. In addition, when BMI started to be adopted in the medical field, the people who were behind this drive for its adoption were largely white male doctors relying on data that included overwhelmingly white male and middle-class subjects. This means there was not a diverse and representative slice of the American population who were included in the studies that were being used to establish BMI as a tool that should be used for widespread health screenings.
Now, we just heard from Dr. Ard that for Asians, that there is an adjustment that's made as a result of that to have it as a closer approximation of body fat. Is that something that's been contemplated for people of African descent?
That question has arisen. However, the problem is that we would not be able to identify who should use the various racialized markers. Should Barack Obama, for instance, use the black marker or the white marker? We have to recognize that we are living in a multi-ethnic society and race is a social construct, just like BMI. And when we force people into these categories, we end up with very serious problems with diagnoses. And one of the other problems with using BMI is the reality that it contributes to worse health outcomes. When we inform people that whenever they go to the doctor, their weight is going to be taken, their BMI will be assessed, and based on that, they are going to be given a suite of recommendations, people are then less likely to go back to the doctor if they know they're going to be categorized as obese. This is a serious problem. In addition, when people attempt to lose weight based on these BMI classifications, we find that they lose weight and then gain it back, and then lose weight again and then gain it back. And I'm quite sure that Dr. Ard would recognize that there are many studies showing that this kind of weight cycling is far worse on your organs than simply remaining fat at the outset. And so there are many reasons that we should repudiate the ongoing use of BMI.
We're talking with UC Irvine Associate Professor of Sociology, Sabrina Strings, with us. Also with us, Dr. Jamie Ard of Wake Forest School of Medicine. We're talking about BMI, its usefulness or lack of usefulness as a proxy for weight-related health conditions. You can ask your questions now by calling 866-893-KPECC, the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Tweet your question at AirTalk or post your question on the AirTalk Facebook page. We'll be back in just 1 minute. Angela writes on the AirTalk page, kpecc.org, I'm short, fit, and black. I work out 6 days a week. I have a decent amount of muscle. On paper, my BMI is borderline high. Yet upon seeing me for the first time in a year, my boss recently described me as tiny. So I don't think BMI is a good way to judge someone's body fat based on their height and weight. That's Angela writing on the AirTalk page. A foolish grunt writes, I'm of athletic build, being a competitive athlete until after college. When I was in training, I can't remember a single time when my BMI returned as healthy. Now that I'm less active, noticing the beginning of middle age spread, I still routinely ignore the automated message I get on Kaiser's website telling me my BMI is too high. I've long since tuned it out as a meaningful indicator. That's Foolish Grunt writing on the AirTalk page. We're talking with Dr. Jamie Ard, who co-directs Wake Forest Baptist Health Weight Management Center. He's a clinical researcher and professor of epidemiology and prevention at Wake School of Medicine. And Sabrina Strings, associate professor of sociology at UCI, author of the book published a couple of years ago, Fearing the Black Body, The Racial Origins of Fat Phobia. Dr. Ard, your response to the points Professor Strings was making right before our break.
So, yeah, I think I agree in that there are certainly limitations to body mass index as laid out. I do think that we have a fair amount of good evidence, again, at a population level, that BMI, one, is correlated with percent body fat in the general population, and there are exceptions. So the people who wrote in pointed those out, right? People who are athletic have a lower percent body fat and more muscle mass on average will definitely have a BMI that might be higher. But when you think about, again, the general population, we're talking about average individuals who are not, you know, spending a lot of time in the gym and being super physically active in muscle building mode. and so I think there's, again, plenty of good evidence that shows that that's a good correlation with total body fat. Now, the issue raised about sort of the use of body mass index to indicate the need to lose weight, I think that's a point where I would differ from Dr. Strings in that I think that body mass index is meant to be a screening tool, but it's not meant to be a treatment target, right? So the idea that if you have a body mass index that's 35 or let's say 40, all right, so at the high end, it does not mean that you need to get to a BMI or body mass index of less than 25 in order to be healthy. You know, if you're metabolically healthy, you could actually get advice to say, look, you're going to benefit from losing some weight, 5 to 10% of your body weight. You don't have to get to a normal BMI. And that will actually lead to benefits that have been demonstrated consistently in terms of reduction of risk going forward, as well as improvements in physical health. On the last point, in terms of, you know, the issue of race and use of BMI-specific cut points for racial identity, I agree. You know, we don't have the science or the evidence to be able to, you know, take a look at everyone's, you know, 23andMe profile and then say, you know, well, you've got this ancestry and so your BMI cut point should be exactly here. But I do think we have enough evidence based on geographic regions and populations that have lower admixture that, yes, there are some differences in the relationship with distribution of body fat and the risk of disease. And again, pointing to someone of Asian descent, we know they have a higher propensity for weight gain in the midsection, and that fat in the abdominal area is more deleterious and leads to increased risk at an earlier amount of accumulation of that fat.
Dr. Art, one of the points the professor made was that this wasn't really developed in the originator of the BMI index, didn't see it for use as an individual screening tool. This was to look at larger populations. So in your view, was it right to apply this to more than that over time? Or was this more convenience because in the lack of something better as a quick screening tool? Is that how this became adopted as opposed to finding that it's really accurate?
Well, I think the evolution of the use of this tool, you know, probably involves at a large extent the, you know, insurance industry and looking at these height and weight mortality tables and identifying, like, at these extremes you see higher risk of mortality, and then you start to, you know, look into the medicalization of BMI in the 70s. That's really when that became prominent, and I think that it became a screening tool simply because it's easy and cheap.
Right.
Everybody can do it.
Let me bring back Professor Strings. Professor Strings, final comment from you about what you'd like to see for the future of BMI or something you think would be a better way of assessing risk.
I think it's important for us to keep in mind that correlation is not the same as causality. And there are zero studies establishing a causal relationship between BMI and negative health outcomes that are commonly deemed comorbidities. All of the studies making these relationships are simply showing correlation. The problem with this is that this does not allow us to find out what the true causes are. And typically, those true causes are social factors: food insecurity, lack of access to healthy foods, lack of walkable neighborhoods. These are the things that we need to change to improve the public health.
Thank you so much, Professor Sabrina Strings of UC Irvine, where she's Associate Professor of Sociology. Our thanks to Dr. Jamie Art as well of Wake Forest School of Medicine, where he's Professor and Co-Director of the Wake Forest Baptist Health Weight Management Center. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Fresh Air and conversation with New York Times reporter Jeffrey Gettleman in New Delhi to talk about the catastrophic COVID-19 cases and deaths that have occurred there. Stay tuned. Coming up at 1 o'clock, it's All Things Considered, the first NPR feed of the afternoon with Austin Cross. I'm back with you tomorrow morning at 10 for Air Talk. Then at 11 o'clock, it's Film Week with our critics. Have a great day.
The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.